Steve and Jill here.
Hello.
Welcome to the Land Academy Show, entertaining land investment talk. I'm Stephen Jack Butella.
And I'm Jill DeWitt, broadcasting from sunny Southern California.
Today, Jill and I talk with member Steve Manis, who shares his Land Academy success stories. Steve comes from us from Palo Alto, California, and blueskylands.com. Before his land career, he worked with grad students and professors at Stanford University in the Department of Chemistry, and I'm sure there's a lot more to this story than I know at all.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Steve, tell us a little bit about your experience at Stanford and how it ultimately led to this conversation we're having.
Sure. And it actually did. There's a direct route, so it's interesting. I had been mostly in sales my whole life. You know, I'll give a very brief background, but I was not... I was always smart and, you know, did well in college and all of that, but I wasn't some driven or motivated student in particular, and I didn't have a real career path. In fact, I remember vividly the day I threw out all of my law school applications.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It was. It was a very fine day because that's sort of the track that I was on, because I grew up in a family of lawyers and my mom was also a paralegal, when that actually meant something in the early days of paralegals, when it was more of a substantial position. And I just, you know, I thought, okay, of course, I'll just go to grad school. I was a history major. I'll go to grad school, or I'll go to law school in this case. And the thought of actually becoming a lawyer was so abhorrent to me that I couldn't do it. I couldn't even apply to the schools. I mean, I'm sure I would have gotten in somewhere, but you know, you grow up with lawyer. There's a lot to say here, which I won't, but I just remember years later going back home. I moved out from Chicago to California, and I've been here for more than a couple decades, Northern California. And I went back for my dad's birthday one year, a few years ago. He's since passed, but we were sitting around the dining room table, and all of a sudden it turned into this political discussion, and my politics happens to be different from theirs. And it was as if I was sitting in the witness chair. Prosecutor, you know, just grilling me relentlessly. And I'm thinking, Mike, what has happened? In 2 minutes' time, I've gone from loving son who flew in for your birthday to God knows what.
Yeah. And it's the Midwest. The culture in the Midwest is like that. I'm from there, too.
Yes, it is. We've talked about this, in fact, the Detroit, because Chicago and Michigan are connected. So anyway, I went into sales and I always enjoyed it and was good at it. And I didn't have direction for many years. So I wound up at Stanford some years later. I needed a job, and there it was. And it was a good job. It was administrative work in the chemistry department. If familiar with universities, I went to grad school myself ultimately. But this was a different world because it's a very, very high level world, very, very high achievers, incredibly hardworking individuals. I mean, those who become professors at Stanford, in particular in the sciences and engineering, are just the very best in the world. And there aren't that many of them who qualify.
But, so you mentioned before in the earlier part of the pre-show that's not on air, that they were the most unhappy group that you've ever met. So I love other people's misery, and so do our listeners. Yes. So I'd love to hear about that.
Oh, happy to tell you. Yes, the single most unhappy group I've ever encountered. And you know, over the years, you encounter a lot of people in life, but they stand alone. The grad students were nice. You know, it's fun working with them, and the postdocs, who basically are the people who come after, you spend a few years after you're a grad student as a postdoc before you move on to whatever you're going to do professionally. And but the professors themselves are in a little world of colleagues who, you know, exist around the planet in all of these departments, and they travel to one another's campuses. They give talks. This is what they do. Their activities revolve around giving those talks, supporting their grad students in the research, and writing grant proposals day in and day out. And most of their time is spent writing grant proposals.
Wow.
Because everything revolves around that. And the competing, ultimately in competition for awards. So I had that, like, and that's a huge part of it. I had one professor in particular. You know, this guy was so good. And every year the Nobel Prizes are awarded. And I was privy to his correspondence just because of the nature of my work. And I would see he didn't win, but he would send out these very nice, he was a good man, very nice letters of appreciation and congratulations to those individuals. And this one would be in Germany, and he'd write in German. And this one would be in France, and he'd write in France. And he was a good man. But year after year, you could see the disappointment in his face.
So asking for money and trying to get published, just like Hollywood.
It's very similar. Yeah, it's just this continual outpouring without fulfillment, generally. And so ultimately,
like, when you're asking for grants constantly, like as a percentage, you know, do you get a grant 50% of the time, 1%?
Good question.
What happens?
I think their percentages are fairly high because they're specialists and they're known. You know, it's, again, people at that level. It's different than some department somewhere.
Different than us.
It's different than you and me. Yes, exactly. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure their percentages are good, but nonetheless, they need a ton of money because they support all their grad students. They pay. If you're getting a PhD, you don't pay anything. You are completely paid for by that professor and therefore beholden to them for 5 years, day and night.
I didn't know that.
Amazing.
Yeah. So ultimately, this professor himself did win a Nobel Prize. This was years later. I happened to see it in the newspaper locally a couple of years back. And I ran into him at Stanford. I was having lunch there one day, not long ago, and I was asking him about it. And he was even more unhappy now because as a result of having won the award, people are tucking at his sleeve 24 hours a day.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
He went from a 4-star restaurant owner to a 5-star, and it wrecked his life.
Oh.
It wrecked his life. Same phenomenon, or similar enough. Yeah, so there we are. This is life in a nutshell, and thank goodness we're not in that world.
Yeah.
So as the hippie black sheep son of the family, how did you get into the land business?
Well, and I suppose I am, because I'm the only one who moved away from Chicago. It's just like you, Jack. You know how it is. Everybody else remains in the Midwest.
I'm right there with you, pal.
Yeah, exactly. And then they don't come out here, so you wind up flying in periodically. I left Stanford knowing that I wanted to be in real estate. I'd had an inkling, and I'd had an interest. But I didn't know anything. So I was able to leave and be supported financially for a time. But I didn't know anything, and I leapt off a cliff. And this was 2006. It was a little bit before the downturn. And I knew just enough to get myself in real trouble. Serious. Things that I look back and I'm like, how in the world would you make such a level of commitment financially without knowing anything? But I did. But the interesting part was I learned a lot in the process. I mean, I learned, first of all, I realized pretty quickly I had to keep us above water, my wife and myself, just the two of us. And I did what I needed to do. And I learned very quickly, okay, this is what you do. You adapt, you figure it out, you move forward, and you keep persevering. You just have your eye on some type of prize. You know, it's a good phrase, actually, eye on the prize. But even if it's might be a little nebulous in the distance, it's very important to move in a direction. And it took me a number of years until I finally landed on the land business.
Right.
But having had a couple of bouts of success along the way in other arenas of real estate, I knew I could do it. Whatever it meant, I knew I could make money. And I learned a lot also in terms, for me, a core strength is dealing with people. I'm not a particularly adept person technically, but I do have a facility apparently to get people to trust me. And it's a sincere thing. It's not just this, you know, people do it and they pull the wool over other people's eyes, but I'm very sincere with people. So in land, once I started, and I actually learned the business the first time around from someone who became a friend of mine. It was just one of these happenstance things. And our fathers had passed around the same time. And I don't even know how this came about, but this was like a Facebook contact of a real estate guy who I had connected with once because I was putting together a, you know, like a whole training webinar series. And he was one of the people I was asking to be a part of it some years before that actual contact. And he wound up calling me one night. Literally, my wife and I were walking on the Stanford campus, And he wound up calling me. This was in the evening. And he was telling me about his dad, and I was telling him about my dad, and we're kindred spirits, and we're a very similar age. And he started telling me about this business he had learned from his dad. And he'd gone a full circle in real estate. He was very successful and very smart and a trainer and all of that. And, a real teacher, not a marketing kind of guy teacher. He was saying he had been feeling nostalgic before his dad's passing because he had recently readopted this training method he'd learned from his dad, I think 30 years before that. Okay. And was again making money with it, selling land, just land. And his dad was doing it until figuratively the day he died, into his 80s. And I thought, oh, this is interesting. Something you can do until the day you die, if needed. Right. And it seems pretty like a good gig.
Was the basis of his training method essentially what we do now?
Essentially what we do, yeah. It's all, what we do is relatively basic. There are variations on the theme. There's nuance, of course, but it's the same business. And I just said, if you ever feel like, I'd be very interested to learn if you have any inclination at all. And he said, I don't want to generate competition for myself, et cetera, et cetera. And lo and behold, a week later, he contacted me and said, let's get started. And we did. And he was extremely helpful. And I began a business.
Are you guys partnershipping deals still?
We never partnered.
Oh.
But we're friends. I connected with him a week ago. We talked via Facebook Messenger, or, we'll follow one another after that. And I was just asking for a little counsel and getting his perspective on some things, because it's how the business is. Everything's evolving, and especially now, because more people are getting into the business, you have to continually adapt.
Yeah.
And one way or another, you just have to figure out a way to stay on top of the wave and ride it. And my wave is going to be a long one, because I'm going to be doing this for a number of years yet.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, us too. We're in this, obviously. We're in this for good.
Yeah.
And what motivates me, it's what you just said. One of the things that you just said is what motivates me is that, and not that I need a lot of motivation anymore, but what really motivates me is that what's possible with this is endless.
Yeah.
And that there's an endless number of people that are doing extremely well in it in our groups and everywhere else. So,
yes.
So if I've had a bad month, it's just because I'm not putting into it what it needs.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's not like the system doesn't work. It's not like there's not enough land or too much competition or any of these external factors that I hear all the time. It's just because I'm not putting enough into it.
It's every time. It's exactly the same thing. I'm not getting my mailings done. I'm not getting my marketing done.
That's it.
There's nothing else. If you get your mailings done, you have to do everything else.
Yep. That's right.
You have no choice. The phone will ring, the letters will come, whatever it is, and you then are forced to respond. So there's only one thing you need to do, and that's mail.
I agree.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, you just got to post it for sale. You got to stay up with that. And then it's all the money comes pouring back in.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to sell. And, that's one area that I've really concentrated on, because one thing is I don't like putting out any money if I don't have to. And I mean none. And I don't want to get stuck with any property, period. I've never been stuck with one. I don't think I ever will, the way I do it. And I like to have them sold before I market them, basically. That's my real working plan now.
Tell us how you do it, Steve. How do you do it?
Okay, so I have two levels of my business. And I run a very simple business. I mean, I know you talk to a lot of people, and I marvel at the level of sophistication of some people. Seriously, it's a wonder to behold, and I'm very impressed by what people are able and willing to do. And for all of us, it's about putting out a lot of energy. In my case, I run a simple operation because I want a balanced life. The way my wife and I lead a very simple life, I do other things. I do teaching. I like to be able to do that, aside from the financial part, just the freedom of time. I make my own schedule and I love it. So very simply, right now, I began experimenting a little while ago because I knew I had to get out of where I was. It was too confining, my level of business. So I began experimenting probably last summer at this point. And I put out a lot of irons into the fire, and some have, borne fruit, which is what we want. And then, of course, I have that many more now because I want to continue to do so. So very simply, I do it at two levels. I started out with mobile home lots in, I have my little corners of Texas, and Texas has a lot of little corners, right? Yeah. It's a good place. You know, people have their favorites. Some people have Arizona, Colorado, et cetera. But what I do, you can do in Tennessee, you can do it in North Carolina, Florida. It doesn't make any difference. So I never gave up on that area of the business. So in those areas, I send out, and you know, I've gotten to know subdivisions, I've gotten to know areas, and I send out my offer letters. But I know exactly what I can sell them for, and I know exactly what I can buy them for.
It's the competence piece, Joe, that we've been talking about. Exactly. Yeah, the confidence to pull a trigger.
Yep.
Essential. It was, you know, there's that funny period in the beginning where you don't know what you're doing. I was fortunate in that I had somebody to guide me through the beginning part of that. But even so, that always ends. You're on your own. Although, of course, you know, you provide a wonderful environment that people gives people the opportunity to connect. But regardless, at a certain point, it's you and your computer.
Yeah. And, so you buy a mobile home lot, and what happens?
All right. So in my case with the mobile home lots, I take them in. Now I don't pay people. I've never, maybe once, I don't pay anybody before I get a deed. People sign their deeds over to me and send them to me. Okay. And I record them, and I have a property to sell. And I let them know as soon as everything's okay, I'll send them money. And I go turn around and I post it on Craigslist, because that's where I've sold every parcel of that type.
Wow.
Every parcel. And my buyers tell me about the land. I'm in California. These parcels are in Texas. They go and they take a look. They tell me what it looks like. Rose washed out, slope, you know, all these things that we know about. This, that, and the other. And then I get a sense, you know, is it going to be a normal family that's just looking for a homestead? There's a lot of that, you know, in these outside of these cities. They're stuck in some mobile home park with their kids. They want to give them a better life. And, you know, they're so grateful to find a piece of land for a few thousand dollars. They can move their family out.
Steve, I remember talking to you like 2 years ago on a consulting call.
Yes, exactly.
I remember being amazed at it back then, and I'm still amazed. I don't want you to give all your secrets up, but I remember you taking this business model and making it your own in this very specific way.
I did.
Trust that you develop with these people. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. And, you know, they're always grateful. The sellers are grateful. The buyers are really grateful. I mean, again, for me, I get great fulfillment out of dealing with the people. I know there are people who would like never to talk with anybody, and I understand that because sometimes they drive you crazy. Yeah, right. No, because you have a business where you don't have to. It's wonderful because the person sitting next to you happens to love talking with people. So, but I'm a one-man show, and you know, I work with my support people in the Philippines who are great, but otherwise, so. I get great fulfillment, particularly with the buyers, because they are so, I mean, I've just got this couple right now. I can't tell you just how grateful they are. And I mean, yes, it's a good deal. But at the same time, there's a substantial profit in it for me. You know, you buy a parcel for this much and you sell it for seven times on terms. It's pretty good, but they're thrilled. So there's a lot of that. So those parcels now I sell primarily on terms.
Okay.
And I do it very simply. I work with a loan servicing company, so they handle all the payments.
Excellent.
That's great.
I set it up so my buyer pays the monthly fee. I don't pay anything. I just facilitate. I get it all set up. They handle late fee, everything. I just get notices every month. Money's been deposited. And then period.
Yeah. Built our whole business around that model, around making sure that both in Land Academy and all the other companies that we have offers to owners, that everybody's happy.
Yeah.
You know, and you want to make sure that the end user, the person that's writing the check, is incredibly happy.
Yep.
Not just us, not just the people in the middle, but all of it, including our employees. So right. And I think that's a West Coast thing. You're back from the Midwest. I don't think that attitude, that we're all in this together attitude, happens so much back there.
I didn't really notice it growing up, let's put it that way. No, I think you're right. But there is a Midwest friendliness that you can bring to the West Coast.
Yeah.
Yes. It's very helpful. It's different.
And work ethic.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a tad different out here, isn't it? No, I remember when I first came out, I couldn't believe it. I just like, who are these people?
You know, me too.
And then I became one, and so I understood.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still not totally acclimated. I still
have Birkin socks on or anything.
Like no, that. I believe it.
When I get to a crosswalk, I still have to look, you know, left and right before I just barrel through. Unlike the natives here, just yes. believe that all the traffic in the whole world should stop because they're walking down the street.
Oh, I know. You know, a lot of people lament now the way things are in colleges and college kids and all that. There's one thing and one thing only I appreciate about their education is they learn how important it is to stop at crosswalks. It's drilled in from, you know, age five, apparently.
Yeah, so that in preschool in the Midwest, but not out here.
Who knows what's going on? I don't even want to know anymore.
Funny.
Yeah.
So can you share? I'm sure.
Oh,
go ahead.
I was going to ask about when you, with your wife, does she get it? Does she want to be a part of this?
No, she does not want to be a part of it. She definitely gets it. So she works a job. You know, we're very different in that respect. Okay. And I'm very grateful for it because it's, you know, there are a number of nice things about this. One is that because of the success in my business, she was able to cut back in her hours a year or so ago. So she went to part-time, which is great. You know, so much more relaxed, and so it's all good. But she could never live like this, not knowing how much money is coming in at the end of the week.
I understand that.
Yeah,
I understand most people are like.
Oh, most people are. Yeah, and for myself, I just had it with these jobs and just could never do it anymore.
Me too.
Even in my real estate career, I had to.
Yeah, right.
I mean, if you really think about it. Mm-hmm. It's just such a different life, and you're beholden in a way that either suits you or does not.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much stuff between you and I that we've never actually had a conversation about.
Yeah, this is one of them.
It is. Like, I've never asked you, like, do you want a real job or any? We've all just said, we all assumed with each other that we just never want to do that again, ever.
I know. Yeah. And I grew up with a family, which was, you know, my dad was a pilot, so it was a union thing. So there was definitely a paycheck. Everybody knew what was happening, you know, kind of thing. And, And for me, I just couldn't stand the time clock life, and I lived that for many years.
Decades.
It drove me nuts, and it's very true. We all know it, Steve. You know it that we all work more hours now, but I'm doing it for me. I'm getting the benefit of it. I'm doing it by choice, and I love it. And I'm fearless. I'm sure you are, too.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not afraid about what's going to happen next Friday. I know we're going to figure it out. I have all the tools and resources to figure it out.
Yes.
Even if it all goes sideways, there's going to be something in here that we can work with.
You know? Oh, yeah. I mean, look, we have systems that we know work, and we've got enough experience. And occasionally I have to remind myself of this. So if I have some problem property that hasn't yet sold, but every one of them has sold, and there's a very simple formula. If it's not selling, lower the price.
Yep.
And it works every time.
Every single time.
Yep.
You've got this mobile home thing going, and it's great. Do you ever consider doing other types of properties, ranch land, houses, mm-hmm. wholesaling houses, or anything like that?
Yeah, so I do have another level of business that I've introduced. So I have that platform, and it was my exclusive business for quite a while, then central, and now of less importance, but it's nice because I can bring in those monthly payments. But the heart of my business now is working with what you could technically call infill lots, but I just call buildable lots.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so 2.0 came out when? Was it September or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this for a while because, I don't know, a year or two ago, Seth Williams interviewed one of his guys who did, he was in Texas also, in Houston, working with builders. And he had this whole methodology, and it always in the back of my mind. And then 2.0 came out, and I studied it, and I realized, oh, I can figure out a way to bring these things together. And along the way, of course, in my business with the mobile home lots, all sorts of people contact you. And I would keep notes of potentials, let's put it that way, whatever they become, but basically potential buyers. Some of them were builders. And I thought, okay, let's see what we can implement here after studying 2.0. And I realized they build in certain areas. They have their favorite subdivisions. Why don't I find out what those are and mail for them, right? I'll be their marketing arm. And then we'll see what that really looks like So I began experimenting. So I did my mailings, and it was, it's much more refined now, but initially it would be, I get to, and now I should say this up front, because it's a little different model. And, you know, Land Academy people are very creative. I've noticed this. And people do many, many variations on the theme.
Yeah.
So there is the tried and true offer letter. And then I have found that in other cases, for me, it works to send out what, you know, some people call the neutral letter, where it's just an offer, you know, just sort of a, I'm interested, that sort of thing. And it is nebulous. There's no question. But I put together a letter with a picture of my wife and me, and it's very folksy, and we just like to make friends, you know, that sort of thing. And people call.
Yeah.
I have a simple business. I use Google Voice. I use a CRM. There's a CRM that I found that works very well for the land business. So there it is. I put in my spreadsheets, it accepts, and I've got everybody there. They call. I don't answer the phone. I respond to messages. And then I see there they are. Joe Smith. Oh, you have half an acre in such and such a county.
I'm sure that really plays well to your sales background, because once you get them on the phone, yes, you can probably folksy get them to, you know, to sell their property or whatever.
And as you know, it's a numbers game. It's a certain percentage. Maybe my percentages are good, but yes. So again, I'm playing to my strength. I know I can talk with people, and I've got my buyer guides who are so grateful, because in any area where it's an active market, a growth area, geographic growth area, these builders cannot get enough properties.
Yep.
They're just scrounging tooth, and they tell me what they go through.
Yeah.
They even though they're building on a lot, in this case, certain ones, they're building a lot already, can't get enough, always need more, always grateful to get a property.
Agree.
I've never talked to a builder who said, "Oh no, we've got enough land right now."
Exactly.
Never.
It doesn't exist. Doesn't exist. That is their lifeblood. That's so true. It's similar to a house wholesaling model, which I had done previously, where your buyers are rehabber guys. And my objective, and I tell this to all of my builders, is I want to get to the point where I just tell you the address, you go out and you tell me what you can pay for it. And that's what I did with the rehabber guys. That's all I needed from them. Basically, I can pay $90,000 for the house, and I know I can buy it for $80,000. Great, we got a deal.
So wait, let me get this straight, because this is great. You send out a letter of interest. They call back and say, "Yeah, I actually do want to sell the property." Nobody talks about price.
No money.
You call your builder, tell him to go out there, and he says, "You know what? I can pay easy $55,000 on this." You go back to the seller and say, "I'm happy to pay you $40,000 for it."
That's right. That's right. That's exactly what I do. And I actually try to find, I feel them out. Not everybody knows or is willing to say, but I always ask them, just very simple, you know, sort of in the middle of a conversation, "Oh, what are you looking to get out of this property? What do you think?" And I just wait. You know, and as you know, if you ask questions and wait, oftentimes people will talk.
They'll trust you. So they obviously trust you by the time you talk to the seller does, by the time you talk to the builder.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key.
Absolutely. Yeah. Not everybody, but most, you know, there's some, you know how some people are, but generally, absolutely they do. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm in the midst of it now this week, right? I've got a guy, we just talked yesterday, but it was the same scenario where my guys went out. I have a couple different builders, and you know, this one I'll send out. And in any case, they tell me, and I go back and I know exactly what I can and can't do, or I can adjust my spread, right? If I think, yeah, I'd like to make 9, but I can make 6, I'm not going to throw away $6,000, right? It just, you know, so there's the model. And see, one of the things that I learned from you was the double your money model, because I had sort of a different mindset before that of reaching for the stars, you know how it can be. And I wouldn't take it unless, and I don't want to do a $1,500 deal. I won't. But I sort of have my limits, but I have a fairly wide range. I'm not going to throw away $4,000.
Okay.
Because what are we talking about here? I send out a contract. These are closed through title. So a month later, I go to a notary and get a signature and send the contract back. And then they send me a check, or I get a wire transfer of some number of thousands of dollars. That's my job.
That's worth your time.
I think I can manage this for $4,000, even though it wasn't 7.
It's exactly. It really is a, if you want it to be, an 8-hour work week, max.
It literally can, yes.
Might not be 8 hours all in one day, but you're kind of on call, but it's still your own time. If you want it to be, I mean, it ends up being a lot more for Jill and I. I don't know why we do this to ourselves, but.
Well, it's your natures. It's your natures. You guys really like working. I like being busy, but I don't like working that much, to be honest. Yeah. Because I like doing other things. But it, no, it's exactly that. And I mean, I don't care if it's 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning. It just,
me too.
Doesn't, none of it bothers me. It's great. Are you kidding? If I have properties that are listed and people are calling me at 7 a.m. California time and we make a deal by 7:30 and then they send the money via PayPal that morning before I even get them a deed. I mean, it's wonderful.
Totally.
Oh, that's a win.
Yeah.
It's a win.
Well, you've done it again. You spent another 15 minutes or so listening to the Land Academy show. Join us next time for another interesting episode. And we answer your questions posted on our online community, landinvestors.com. It's free.
You are not alone in your real estate ambition.
Steve, it's a pleasure talking to you. It's really all came back to me now. Yeah. I remember you scheduling a call and us, I think you... If I remember right, you just sold out of a subdivision, like a whole sub, right?
I did. And I actually went back to that subdivision recently and I got 5 more deals.
Yeah, it was something like 40 or 50 or that's 70 awesome. Transactions or
I
something.
I did, yeah.
One little area.
I know, it's amazing. I thought it was played out by now. I know how many people are mailing there because I get these letters.
Right.
Doesn't seem to make any difference. If you hit them on the right day, it just doesn't make
That's it.
That is so awesome.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
It does. If you're watching or wherever you're listening, please subscribe and rate us there.
We are Steve and Jill. Information
and inspiration
to buy undervalued property. Great to talk to you, man.
Thank you. I appreciate you both very, very much. You've made a great difference in my life.
Yeah. Thank you. That's great to hear. And thanks for the short notice. I mean, not a lot of people just jump in and turn the camera on. When I say a lot of people, me and Jill.
I was good. I tend to work mornings and then I have my afternoons free. So I was out at the ocean walking and I thought, we can do this. Even if it's this afternoon, all I have to do is call in. So yeah.
Great.
Happy to do so. Absolutely.
Thanks again.
We'll be on the call later today, right?
Yes, I will be there today.
All right, great.
1 o'clock.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks a lot, guys. Bye-bye.